final frontier. These are the voyagers of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. My woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. We make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Cause you can't stop us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raise don't shotgun. We say grace, we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land.
run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office, and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
There are seven fundamental methods of directly transforming other forms of energy into electrical energy: static electricity, electromagnetic induction, electrochemistry, photoelectric effect, thermoelectric effect, piezoelectric effect, nuclear transformation. Static electricity refers to the buildup of electric charge on the surface of objects. The triboelectric effect is an electric exchange of charged particles created by friction from rubbing two different materials together, one being positive and one negative. It is also referred to as static cling, with opposite particles attracting and like particles repelling. The natural phenomenon of static electricity is lightning. The movement of particles build up a static charge. Once the potential difference is large enough, the static charge will discharge electricity. Electromagnetic induction is the production of an electric current across a conductor moving through a field. Electromagnetic induction is the fundamental principle for the operation of generators, transformers, induction motors, electric motors, synchronous motors, and solenoids. Electrochemistry is the transformation between chemical energy and electrical energy, commonly referred to as electrolysis, where the chemical reaction is driven by an external applied voltage. The chemical reaction occurring in this primary battery produces a voltage. The photoelectric effect is the transformation of light energy into electrical energy. When photons from sunlight hit a solar cell, light energy is transformed into electrical energy. When the photons from sunlight hit the solar cell, electrons are emitted, creating an electric charge. The thermoelectric effect, commonly referred to as the Seebeck effect, can be used to generate electricity, measure temperature, or change the temperature of objects. Because the direction of heating and cooling is determined by the polarity of the applied voltage, thermoelectric devices are efficient temperature controllers. Conversely, when a voltage is applied to it, it creates a temperature difference. The piezoelectric effect is the generation of electricity resulting from mechanical stress or pressure. The piezoelectric effect occurs when the charge balance within a material's crystal lattice is disturbed. When there is no applied stress on the material, the positive and negative charges are evenly distributed and there is no potential difference. When the lattice is changed slightly, the charge imbalance creates a potential difference. Nuclear transformation. In nuclear fission, large atoms break into smaller ones and give off thermal energy. When a neutron is fired at the nucleus of a large atom, the atom becomes unstable and splits into two smaller atoms. This produces energy and gives off additional neutrons. These neutrons collide with more large, unstable nuclei of the original material and continue the chain reaction. In nuclear fusion, massive energy is given off when small atoms fuse together to make larger atoms. A neutron is released at the same time. Stars like the Sun make their energy when nuclear fusion happens inside them at extremely high temperatures and pressures.
It's a really exciting time to be alive. We have a front row seat to the only known transformation of a world powered by dirty fossil fuels to a planet that gets its energy from renewable, clean sources. It's going to happen just once. Right now, these are the top 10 potential energy sources of tomorrow. Number 10, space-based solar power. Every hour, more energy from the sun reaches us than we Earthlings use in an entire year. To try and save a lot more of it, one idea is to build giant solar farms in space that will collect some of the higher intensity, uninterrupted solar radiation. Giant mirrors would reflect huge amounts of solar rays onto smaller solar collectors. This energy would then be wirelessly beamed to Earth as either a microwave or laser beam. One of the main reasons this amazing idea is still just an idea is because it's, big surprise, very expensive. But it could become a reality in the not-so-distant future as our solar technology develops, and the cost of launching cargo into space comes way down, thanks to the work of companies like SpaceX. Number 9. Human power. We already have human-powered devices, but scientists are working on harvesting power generated from normal human movement. We're talking about tiny electronics here, but the potential when multiplied by billions of people is big. And with developers making electronics that use less and less power, one day your phone may charge when it rustles around in your pocket, your bag, or moves in your hand, or your fingers move on the screen. At Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory, scientists have even demonstrated a device that uses viruses to translate pressure into electricity. Yes, it's amazing as it sounds, and no, there's no way I'm going to try and explain how it works. Of course, it's linked below if you want more info. There are even small body-worn systems that passively produce electricity when you move. Human power isn't going to solve global warming, but every little bit helps. Number 8, tidal power. Harnessing all the energy in the motion of the ocean could power the world several times over, which is why over 100 companies are trying to figure out how. Because of the focus on wind and solar, the tidal energy industry kind of got elbowed out of the early mix, but these systems are quickly becoming more efficient. For one, meet Oyster, a 2.4 megawatt producing hinged flap that attaches to the ocean floor and, as it opens and closes, pumps high pressure water onshore where it drives a conventional hydroelectric turbine. One of those could power a whole housing development or a couple massive residential towers, roughly 2,500 homes. An engineer with the Air Force Academy has created the Terminator winged shaped turbine that employs lift instead of drag, allowing it to theoretically harness 99% of a wave's energy instead of the 50% that current tidal projects can get. And Perth, Australia, just got the world's first ever wave-powered desalination plant that provides the city with enough drinking water for 500,000 residents. Number 7, hydrogen. The element hydrogen, by far the most abundant in the universe, is very high in energy, but an engine that burns pure hydrogen produces almost no pollution. This is why NASA's powered its space shuttles and parts of the International Space Station with this stuff for years. The only reason we're not powering the entire world with hydrogen is because it only exists on our planet in combination with other elements like oxygen. You know, good old H2O. Russia even converted a passenger jet to run on hydrogen in the late 80s, and Boeing recently tested small planes that fly on hydrogen. Once the hydrogen is separated, it can be pumped into mobile fuel cells in vehicles that are able to directly convert it into electricity. These cars are now being manufactured on a fairly large scale. Honda's planning on demonstrating the versatility of its new hydrogen fuel cell car by plugging it into a model home in Japan to power the house, instead of the car sucking electricity from the building like its electric-powered competitors have to do. Honda says one of these fully fueled cars could power an entire house for a whole week, or drive 300 miles without refueling. The main obstacle right now is the relatively high cost of these vehicles and the lack of hydrogen stations to refuel them. Although California now has plans for 70 of these stations across the state, South Korea is expected to have a total of 43 soon, and Germany's aiming for 100 by 2017. Number 6, geothermal heat from underground lava beds. The method of converting the heat rising from the depths of the molten core of the Earth into energy, also known as geothermal, powers millions of homes around the world, including the electricity usage for 27% of the Philippines and 30% in Iceland. But an Icelandic deep drilling project may have recently discovered the Holy Grail when it hit a pocket of magma, which had only happened once before in Hawaii. The team pumped water down into the hole, which the scorching magma instantly vaporized to a record-setting 842 degrees Fahrenheit. This highly pressurized steam increased the power output of the system tenfold, an amazing success that should lead to a giant leap in the energy-generating capabilities of geothermal projects around the world. Number 5, nuclear waste. Nuclear fission power plants are the traditional reactors that have been in use around the world for decades and provide the United States with 20% of our electricity. They use something called light water technology to surround the fuel rods with water, which slows the neutrons and allows for a sustained nuclear reaction. But the system is really inefficient. Only 5% of the uranium atoms in the rod get used up by the time it has to be removed. All that unused, highly radioactive uranium just gets added to our growing stockpile of nuclear waste. But now, finally, there appears to be another, more efficient way, called a fast reactor, where the rods are submerged in liquid sodium instead of water. This allows 95% of the uranium to be used, instead of the unacceptably inefficient 5%. Adopting this method would solve the huge problem of getting rid of our 77,000 tons of radioactive waste, because these new reactors can reuse it. GE Hitachi has already designed a fast reactor called PRISM and is shopping it to power companies. But the biggest obstacle is the high cost of building new nuclear power plants. Plus, you have to overcome the political stigma that nuclear is a dangerous energy source. Still, the benefits are huge. It's a proven technology that emits pretty much no greenhouse gases. The big success story is France, who has 75% of its electricity needs met by its 59 nuclear power reactors. Number 4, solar windows. With production and installation costs getting cheaper by the day, solar power is taking off around the world. Europe is the best in photovoltaics and is driven by its leader, Germany. On an average sunny day in 2012, Deutschland got as much energy from the sun as 20 nuclear power stations, enough to power 50% of the country. Spain is now generating more than 50% of its power from renewable resources like solar. A California desert is home to the largest solar power station in the entire world, and the United States increased its solar capacity by nearly 500% from 2010 to 2014. And if you think that that's as fast as solar can possibly grow, listen to this. Researchers at the Los Alamos National Laboratory in New Mexico just made a significant breakthrough in quantum dot solar cell technology that will allow highly efficient solar panels to double as transparent windows. When this technology becomes cheap enough to hit the mass market in the next couple of years, every sun-exposed window in the world will have the potential to be converted into a mini power station. Number 3. Biofuels. From 2002 to 2013, biofuels grew more than 500% in the U.S. as production of crop-derived ethanol and biodiesel became a mainstream substitute or supplement to gasoline in our cars. In fact, back in the day when Henry Ford first developed his Model T, he thought it would run on ethanol. The discovery of vast amounts of cheap oil all over the world unfortunately made it the go-to energy source, but renewable biofuels are making a strong comeback now. The only problem is that the currently dominant first generation of biofuels use the same land and resources that have traditionally been used to grow food, which is driving up the cost of food and causing big problems in a lot of the developing world. So something has to change if biofuels are going to give us a chance at replacing oil with something clean burning. That's where a plant like switchgrass comes in. It's hardy, it grows like a weed just about anywhere, and it isn't food. But if we wanted to run all of the world's cars on it, we'd need to plant it on an amount of land equivalent to the entire countries of Russia and the United States combined. So that's not going to work. This brings us to the third generation of biofuels, algae, which has all the right ingredients to replace oil once and for all. Algae's natural oil content is greater than 50%, which means it can be easily extracted and processed. We can convert the remaining parts of the plant into electricity, natural gas, and even fertilizer to grow even more algae without chemicals. Algae grows quickly and doesn't need farmland or fresh water. Just last month, Alabama became the world's first algae biofuel system that can also effectively treat human wastewater. This actually resulted in a carbon-negative outcome. The 40,000-a-day demonstration plant basically floated giant bags on a bay, pumped wastewater into them, added a little algae, and then let the sunlight do its thing. Before long, algae had grown everywhere and cleaned the wastewater so well it could either be released back into the bay or reused by people as drinking water. Number 2. Flying wind farms. We're already getting a lot of energy from the wind, but with the buoyant air turbine, or BAT, that floats 1 to 2,000 feet above the ground where winds are stronger and more consistent, we could soon be getting that energy much more efficiently. The system is simple. A ringed blimp with a wind turbine in the middle is tethered securely to the ground. It'll produce twice as much power as similarly sized tower-mounted turbines. It can even handle winds of more than 100 miles per hour and can be fitted with additional devices like a Wi-Fi unit, which would help bring the internet to parts of the world that don't have it yet. The buoyant air turbine was designed for bringing renewable wind energy to rural parts of the world, where building a traditional wind turbine was impossible, and will first be deployed in Alaska. It can even automatically detect and adjust its floating height to where the best wind speed is. When the wind speed is dangerously high, the thing will dock itself, eliminating the need for manual labor. Flying wind turbines like this should soon replace all the less efficient tower-based systems and could allow for the construction of offshore wind farms that have, until now, been really expensive to build. Number 1. Fusion. Unlike fission, nuclear fusion doesn't create any deadly nuclear waste because it fuses atoms together instead of splitting them apart, so there's no threat of a runaway reaction that could lead to a meltdown event. But this is easier said than done. One Nuclear Prize-winning physicist described fusion as trying to put the sun into a box. The idea is pretty, the problem is we don't know how to make the box. The technical issue is that fusion reactions will produce material that's so volatile and hot it will damage the reactor that created it. This isn't stopping private companies and governments from spending billions to research the technology and solve these problems. And if the immense challenges can be overcome, fusion will provide virtually limitless energy and power the world. That's why the world's wealthiest governments are collaborating on the controversial International Thermonuclear Experimental Reactor in France, known as ITER. When was the last time Russia, China, Europe, and the United States collaborated on anything? That's how important for humanity this project is. And because of its revolutionary potential, several powerful companies like Lockheed Martin are quietly working on their own fusion reactors. Lockheed has a very optimistic timeline for their system, projecting that they will meet global energy demand by 2050. Their optimism may be fairly justified. In October 2013, in separate research, scientists at the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory in the United States achieved a huge milestone in fusion when, for the first time, a fuel capsule gave off more energy than was applied to it. Thanks for watching. Let us know if we missed anything or if you disagreed with our rankings. And if you like this video, help the conversation spread by sharing.
Aw, crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html. I posted some links in the chat room to some videos that talk about different forms of electricity and gathering energy up and such. But did you know that an American physicist, Robert J. Van de Graaff, during 1929 invented the Van de Graaff generator and essentially showed the world how to replicate lightning. Somewhere on this earth, all day long, every day, there's a lightning strike going. You know, static electricity builds up, and when the energy potential in the atmosphere and the energy potential in the ground's high enough to overcome the resistance of the atmosphere in between, you get what's known as a lightning strike. And there's a lot of power in there. The Van de Graaff generator, it was able to, you know, generate, can be as much as 5 megavolts. A tabletop version of the same little gizmo could generate 100,000 volts and store enough energy to produce a visible spark. So, you know, when science says light is heat and heat is light, then that means that if you can see it, then it's got a temperature to it. It's hot. And so with all these different versions of electricity out there, if you can see, you know, if you watch really close, if you actually flip a switch and look at the outlet, if you can see inside there, right before it actually makes contact, you see a little arc jumps across there. And so energy in itself has heat with it, electricity. And if modern day technology could ever catch up to old basic science, then this so-called energy crisis or world crisis, as far as the everybody knows how I feel about global warming and being man-made caused and such about carbon emissions, but it's all pure ridiculousness in my mind. But nonetheless, if they claim that this is definitely a problem and we need to resolve these issues and use clean, renewable alternative energies, then all the information necessary to do what needs to be done is already on the table. Now, if you look at a Van de Graaff generator and you understand its function on how it uses a couple different materials and some friction to rub electrons and exchange electrons and get to actually build up a charge on the top load of the Van de Graaff, and then when it builds up high enough charge where it can ionize the air in between the top load and the ground rod, then it will literally leap across the gap. And if you've ever tinkered around with Van de Graaff generators, you'll note that the longer you leave those things running, eventually that charge will get high enough it'll leap clear across the room if necessary to be able to find some path to ground. So we have a really good understanding on how, you know, electricity travels. And if we actually took that understanding and modified with a few other anomalies from other devices that we've already got in play, then we can utilize what would have normally been classified as waste energy to supply all of our energy needs. Now, in that pod that I played right there, they mentioned many different ways of getting energy. They also mentioned in there one that I would really like to talk about that had to do with the nuclear industry. There's already designed plans for a reactor that will use 90 to 95% of the energy from what they classified as depleted uranium or radioactive rods, that they're only getting a small percentage of the power. They only use probably about 10 or 20% or less. I can't even remember now. But anyway, when they put these rods together, they're highly refined radioactive rods, and they use these to boil water into steam. Well, at a certain point, it will no longer boil the water at the efficiency necessary to produce the amount of steam to turn the turbines to keep up with the energy demand. And so they're classified as, you know, depleted. And they go into the waste, water cooling pools. And then eventually, 10 years later, would be stored somewhere else where whenever they finally lose enough of their energy to actually be safe enough to store in a container and then buried in the ground or wherever they want to put them. Anyway, this particular reactor that they had designed was able to use up 90% to 95% of all the energy in those. So we have the technology right now to move forward with nuclear power that would, instead of having highly radioactive materials, would deplete that down to, you know, just slightly radioactive materials. And even at that point in the game, there's still leftover energy left in there that could actually be utilized. So you could get what would have normally been the waste material to generate a lot of power, at the same time moving forward towards completely to completely stabilize the material to a point where it's not radioactive anymore. Basically running the batteries completely dead. And so in the nuclear industry, we have new capabilities right now to where we could literally clean up the waste of the old radioactive materials just by building plants to basically burn off whatever's left of the radioactivity in the rods. Now, I told so many people out there that we've already got the solutions for all the different problems in the world. It's just a matter of putting these problems together. The Van de Graaff generator, you know, it's not going to run your house as it stands, but these little ideas could be built on to the extent where we know that voltage is pressure and pressure gets work done, and so we're able to produce a massive amount of voltage with just a small one. 100,000 volts is a lot of volts, a lot of pressure. You charge up a lot of capacitors with that kind of pressure. And so we know how to move energy around. We know how to store energy. We basically have the capabilities, literally, thanks to guys like Robert J. Van de Graaff and Nikola Tesla and a few other ones out there. Lord Kelvin generator basically was set up to use falling water to build up a static charge. So there's so many different ways that we can get static electricity, which if you actually look at the whole big picture of it, electricity, power, wherever you believe it comes from, it's pretty much universal. We just find different ways to do it. Some ways is by, you know, basically shaking the electrons loose to create a current flow of electrons that produces pretty much the same exact thing. So wherever you find electricity, you're going to find magnetism. Wherever you find magnetism, and you know, they kind of go hand in hand together. So if you're able to produce hundreds of thousands, if not millions of volts, or like this Van de Graaff generator could be as much as 5 megavolts. It's a lot of power. And so if you're able to produce that amount of volts, and you're also able to store that amount of energy and use that, it's basically, you know, like blowing up a balloon. You know, you pressurize that balloon. Once you let that balloon go, the balloon goes crazy, flies all over the room, and you just got some work done with that pressure. So what I've been trying to show people all along, what I've been trying to tell people, and the reason why I keep getting myself in trouble when I say I don't care about current, watts, and amps, and all that kind of jazz, as the school book says, and for all the measurements that goes out there, is because we actually need to talk about different forms of energy that those numbers wouldn't apply to until you get around to actually running the inefficient appliances that we already have designed. Now, all the appliances that we have designed can be re-engineered to use a lot less energy or to use a completely different type of energy. When I talk about plasma technology, I'm not talking about the hoodoo voodoo version of plasma like the sham artist out there, Keshi, that's out there stealing people's money. What I'm talking about is when you energize a noble gas into the fourth state of matter, being plasma. When science says the light is heat and heat is light, vice versa, then that tells you something. If you can generate enough power to actually generate visible light, then you actually have heat. Also in that podcast, it talked about thermal energy, where people were tapping into thermal vents, such as volcanic vents, and using that to use basically thermoelectric energy to do the same exact thing that we're talking about. Now, if you ever understood how a thermocouple or a thermopile or even a Peltier element works, they work off of a temperature difference, such as if you take any two types of metal and you put one of the ends together and then you apply heat to it, the temperature difference will actually cause an electric charge. It'll cause the electrons to, you know, move around and cause a little electric current. Now, in like a thermocouple, it's really not that substantial, but it can be enough to actually turn things on and off. So we use thermocouples for, you know, switches and stuff to turn the furnace on and off. And they only become inefficient when both sides of those metals get to the same temperature. When they get to the same temperature, the process actually stops. The same thing would apply with a Peltier element that uses a temperature difference as well. You keep one side cold and keep the other side hot, and as long as these two have a temperature difference, then the materials in the center will do the same process as the thermocouple. Well, now that we know this, we know of super efficient ways that we can actually generate thermal electricity. Using the atmosphere outside and the temperature difference of the thermal vent inside there and different materials, we are able to produce a thermoelectric charge that can be substantial enough to charge up everything and you know, battery banks, capacitor banks, and be able to run things on demand. So that's just one of the many ways so that we can still enjoy the luxuries of electricity. Excuse me, I had to get a drink of my coffee. When when Tesla wanted to do wireless energy transfer, he understood how energy actually transfers. He understood that energy would travel in waves and different frequencies. So there are so many, if not trillions, of different frequencies available in nature that wouldn't be harmful to, you know, the way that your body functions. And it wouldn't be harmful to nature. So that's just one of the many ways. We haven't even scratched the surface of how we can actually tap into natural energy and use this energy in such an efficient manner that would be making those who are concerned about so-called fossil fuels, you know, happy that it's not polluting and it's not producing dangerous radiation and such. And so using everything we've learned from the Van de Graaff generator, the Lord Kelvin device, and there's so many different other static generators from way back, and using what we've learned from Tesla of how to take high voltage and pulse coils that would in turn, you know, ramp frequencies up, or you can even tune them down. There are so many different methods by which we can actually utilize the forces of electricity that it's just mind-blowing. And so if we took the knowledge just from the Van de Graaff generator alone, and we combine that with plasma technology. If you look inside the little nifty toys they call plasma globes, it basically ramps a voltage up, send it through argon gas inside of a chamber where it's all contained, and at the heart of that plasma you have heat. They didn't take it any further than that. Which is what I'm talking about doing, is actually taking it further than that. Being able to transfer that heat from the center of that plasma out and guide it to where you want it to go and get useful work done. Now, we've already talked about how thermal electricity works, basically. And so we know that we can actually take that heat energy and produce electricity with it. Not to mention the fact that you can heat water, and at the right frequency range, you could actually boil the water into steam. You could make a plasma generating system that would make a nuclear reactor look like a child's toy. So, everything I'm talking about so far isn't necessarily a new form of energy. It's just utilizing what we already know in a more efficient manner. It's using it in a completely different manner than in which we've done it before. If you take and refine radioactive material into highly refined radioactive rods, and you use that to boil water, and you're only getting a small amount of usage out of them before they're not efficient enough to boil the water to produce enough pressure to turn the turbines that actually turn the generator heads, then you got a lot of waste that's generated. And they're talking in the tons of waste that we've got in as far as radioactive material that is considered to be depleted. It's still radioactive. It's still hot, but it's not hot enough to boil the water efficiently. Well, in boiler systems, I used to be a boiler technician when I was younger, back in the 80s, whenever most of the Navy vessels were running off of boiler systems. And they used fuel oil to heat up the water in the steam, to superheat it and flash it in the steam, to build up pressures of 650 to 1250 PSI so that you'd have on-demand steam to run not only generator turbines, but to actually run big steam engines as well. Even if that weren't efficient, you would burn through hundreds of gallons per hour, you know, whatever. You'd use up a lot of fuel. Using the technologies that we've learned from guys like Van de Graaff and Tesla and all that, and the knowledge about how we can actually speed up the electrons and stuff, Stephen Gibbons in the chat room says, how's yours and Shazuz's plasma generator coming? Oh, he's asking Jermaine that. The biggest problem we got with the prototypes that we're building as far as that is getting them sealed up, vacuumed down, and getting the argon. And it's something that if you're trying to do in your own shop, it's a little tricky. So I need to find somebody who's in the neon sign business that can, you know, help me get that process down. The actual reactor itself doesn't necessarily have to be made out of glass. The reason why the very first prototype that I'm trying to put, well, it ain't the first one because I've broke three of them so far because of leaks or whatever. But the actual design doesn't require that it has to be made out of glass. I just want the first original prototypes to be made out of glass so that you can actually visibly see something that's occurring inside there. If you can see what's going on in there, it's a little bit easier to explain how this thing is actually functioning. And it's not new technology. It's based off of things like the mercury arc rectifier from the late 1800s. If they'd have knew back then what they had access to, we wouldn't be seeing any nuclear power plants today, because they would have been doing this same process of generating steam using completely different technologies that were perfectly harmless, unless you talk about the high voltage and getting electrocuted portion of it. But as far as radioactive waste and potentials of hydrogen explosions and stuff like that, it wouldn't be a problem. Because once you understand how hydrogen and oxygen work together, and once you understand the pressure and how the water molecule works, you know, water, according to science, is a dipole molecule. It has a positive side, it has a negative side. And if you send a wave through there, such as a microwave, you cause, when the north and the south peaks are going past this thing, it causes the water molecule to rock back and forth. And because the microwave is a short, fast wave, it will rock that water molecule so rapidly that it will produce friction, which in turn will produce heat. So the same microwave technology that you got in your kitchen could have been used all along in order to generate steam that would turn turbines and turn generating systems that would power all your homes. And so with that said, the technology's been available all this time. Now, soon enough, industry is going to basically put free energy on the market. And that's I don't even know what it is. I'm trying to think of a way to phrase this. Well, on one hand it is free energy, but on the other hand they're still going to figure out a way to charge you for it. That's what I'm trying to say. If at some point solar technology finally catches up, which we're right on top of it, it means you're going to have windows that are completely see-through, and you'll be able to literally embed solar panels right into any window, even into a drinking glass. You could have a drinking glass that had your drink in there, and inside the drinking glass would have built-in solar technology and LED systems that would light the glass up. It'd be really cool. We could actually do that today to some extent, but with the solar panels that they have already on the market, there are flexible solar panels, so you could build a drinking glass that, whenever it's setting out in the sun, would actually maybe generate a little bit of electricity and keep the doggone thing cool using the temperature difference from a Peltier element. So there's a good device for you that you could actually put together. Use a Peltier element for a coaster and plug your drinking device into deal with the built-in solar, and it'd sit there and keep itself cool with the temperature difference from the outside. There's a lot of different possibilities. Technology's cool if you actually pay attention to it. But at some point, the mainstream manufacturing and industry is going to literally put free energy out there on the table. It's coming. It's already, the proof is already there. You know, if you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough for it. You know, if at some point, this becomes basically you can go out and buy windows for your house that already have built-in solar. And then if you paid attention all along, you could take that built-in solar and put it into battery banks and run inverters that you could literally charge your house, and your electric bill would basically go to dirt. Unless, of course, they figure out ways to regulate it into taxes and such that will basically rip you off. But if you got the access to that technology and you built your house from the get-go being completely off the grid, then it wouldn't even be an issue anymore. So there's all kinds of different sources of energy. You know, most common ones are chemical energy, where you like your lead acid battery, where you use chemicals to literally interact with one or another and cause an electron flow. We already talked about thermal energy, and kinetic energy basically is movement which occurs when water moves with tides or flows downstream, such as a hydroelectric dam or the paddles that they put out there in the ocean and catches the wave going back and forth. And we talked a little bit about nuclear industry. Nuclear energy that right now is in the Stone Age, as far as I'm concerned, of what it could have been. A lot of people are afraid of the nuclear power industries. And you think about like Three Mile Island and Fukushima and all the different, the Chernobyl and all the different accidents that occurred that over time, that in some folks' world would have destroyed the world by now, but others, not so much. It seems like, guys like Galen Windsor that did the video nuclear scare scam, you know, he lived to be about 80 some odd years old, and he was trying to tell everybody all along that it wasn't as dangerous as everybody thought it was. I guess, if people keep you in fear of different types of energies, then, they can keep you under control as far as charging your electric bill, doing it the old-fashioned way, coal-fired power plants or, nuclear power plants, which a lot of people protest. They don't like nuclear power. And I'm sitting here saying all along, we don't even need nuclear power. With a combination of what we know from solar energy to thermal electrics and even rotational energy, this is the energy derived from spinning, typically produced by mechanical devices such as flywheels, and then using physics involved in that, where centrifugal force comes into play. Weighted flywheels, if you ever looked at any kind of gasoline engine, you'll note that it's got a weighted flywheel on it that's balanced out so that when this thing gets to spinning, it can actually overcome the compression of the engine or device necessary to keep the motion going. So that's one of the things in the alternative energy, when people are trying to build self-charging electric generators, where you have electric motor running a electric generator head, they use flywheel systems, weighted flywheel systems, to actually overcome the cogging effect on the other side when you start kicking that generator on. The same thing is what they do inside of an internal combustion engine to overcome that compression. So I honestly believe that properly engineered, using the known laws of physics, you could design the perfect all-electric generator. You know, there's a company called Redline out there, Redline Generators, that I got on a couple of they're 12 volts to 120 volts at 500 watts apiece. And they use these things on telephone trucks to run big lighting systems while they're out working on power lines and telephone poles, telephone lines, whatever. So they got basically a generator that is hooked to their electrical system in their vehicles, that is able to, without a use of inverters, transfer that energy over to AC current that can run big bright lights that can, you know, stay on for long periods of time while they're working out there in the dark. I've got two of these things, and both of them are on the old Electron motorcycle, the self-charging motorcycle that I put together. Anyway, I believe that properly engineered, using every bit of physics that we know about, science and mechanics, that it is possible to literally build what they would classify as a perpetual motion device that, once you got it started, would be self-contained. Now, there's a lot of stuff and a lot of arguments over it, why you can't do this and how you're not going to be able to get out more than you put in and so on and so forth. But nonetheless, in one of the podcasts, they had said that they had put a fuel cell together and it was getting out more energy than necessary to get it energized. That to me sounds like over unity, and that's the mainstream science talking about that kind of stuff. And so with that said, properly engineered, using everything we know to this point in the game, there ain't no reason why we couldn't build power plants for every single household out there using what we've already got. Static electricity is so easy to generate that it's ridiculous. I mean, you do it by accident all the time. Walking across the carpet, you build up a static charge, and then that charge is transferred from your finger to whatever you touch afterwards. Maybe your brother's ear or whatever. Nonetheless, that's on a small scale. We could actually build the equivalents of lightning machines that would do the same exact thing that lightning does, but on a much larger scale. And that's a whole lot of power to contain. What would you do with that power? You could turn that massive amount of high voltage into heat. And that heat energy could be then in turn transferred over to usable current that you would use in your inefficient devices that you got. And if you actually go out and pay attention to the efficiencies of different types of fuels and the way that engines are designed, they're designed so incredibly inefficient that you waste more energy. Like, the internal combustion engine is said to be only 36% efficient. That means that other amount a percentage is all waste. So being able to, you know, recapture that energy on the other side, the heat loss in an engine alone is incredible. If there was ever a proof of over-unity, the internal combustion engine is the one that stands out to me the most, because if you take one thing away from that system, then that engine will literally generate enough power to destroy itself while wasting all that fuel. So if you're wasting over 60% of the doggone fuel and generating enough power that if you take one part out of that system, you'll literally destroy it. You'll destroy that engine. Then that tells me there's a whole lot of room for improvement. So from start to finish, if you engineer this engine to utilize the fuel, only what fuel necessary to get the job done of pushing the pistons down and resetting the system for the next time the system fires, then you get a perfect clean burn every time, then your exhaust is insignificant now. So we could take and perfectly engineer an engine that would have no losses, including heat. Heat is due to friction of materials that, you know, you got to keep the oil in there. You got to keep the viscosity of the oil. Viscosity is essentially the thickness of that oil. You got to keep it from breaking down, because every single material out there has a thermal breakdown point. And once you reach that thermal breakdown point, that's when the damage starts to happen. So in the modern engine, they will literally design it so that they'll have a softer material that will wear out first and then give you an indication that this material has gone bad, so that you know that it's now time to replace said bearing or whatever. And so with that said, that means that the lubrication portion of that engine is not working as efficient as it could. For instance, if you got an engine that does not have an oil cooler, and you have an engine that does have an oil cooler, as long as this engine that has the oil cooler is keeping the temperature of those parts from reaching their thermal breakdown point, the engine without the oil cooler will fail first, because the parts will reach their thermal breakdown point before the one with the oil cooler. So we know that if we keep this oil at the perfect temperature, that it will take away the heat from the parts so rapidly that that part will never have the opportunity to fail, because it will never reach its thermal breakdown point. And a lot of people try to get around this by building better types of oil so that, you know, they can withstand more heat and, you know, be able to keep it lubricated longer. But nonetheless, you're never going to build, even with the best lubrication, you're never going to build it better than an oil-cooled system, where you're taking that heat, transferring that heat away from those bearings and getting the job done without allowing it to reach its thermal breakdown point. So, properly engineered, you could literally build an internal combustion engine that would never fail, and it wouldn't be polluting. So even the so-called fossil fuels would be not a problem. And properly engineered, we got machinery that run off of different types of fuels. Diesel engines will run off of diesel fuel, and sometimes other types of biofuels and such, and gasoline engines were designed to run off of gasoline. They were specifically designed for that specific type of fuel. An engine that would run off of water, which is hydrogen and oxygen, could also be engineered to run off of that specific type of fuel. Water's a fuel. Regardless of all the naysayers out there that say water's not, you know, it takes too much energy to crack the hydrogen and oxygen, they don't seem to understand the concept of re-engineering to specifically do a job, such as when you boil water into steam, and science says steam will expand 1600 times its volume when it is flashed into steam. That's pressure. Enough pressure to run a turbine, enough pressure to pressurize a piston and a cylinder and push a piston down. So properly engineered, you could literally build an engine that would use, it would start running like a steam engine, begin to run like a compressor technology, be able to utilize what would have normally been waste heat for a function such as keeping the engine up to operating temperature, and using what we've learned from diesel engines of compression ignition. See, one of the things that they keep trying to throw into the mix there is that you can't compress a liquid. That's why they use hydraulics. Hydraulics for, you know, you, since the liquid can't be compressed and you force pressure down in there, it will literally push, lift up on the other side. But if you change that liquid into a gas, then the whole concept changes altogether, because you can compress a gas. And so you ain't got what they would like to call as hydrolocking or whatever. So all the naysayers that say that water cannot be used as fuel for whatever purpose have overlooked technology that's already on the market. There's hydrogen technology out there that uses the hydrogen separation to actually generate electricity in a fuel cell that would run an electric motor. There's hydrogen technology out there that uses electrolysis process to separate the hydrogen and oxygen in order to burn these two types as fuel in an internal combustion engine. There's hydrogen technology out there that basically will use sound waves, radio waves, to separate the hydrogen and oxygen to store in containers that will be pressurized. Basically, you could use it on demand, just like a propane or butane or any of the other gases out there that, you know, are already running forklifts and buses and all kinds of stuff. So understanding how the science works in every single one of these, and taking all these things in conjunction with each other and combining them together, you can use compression ignition from the diesel engine now to, when you vaporize the water into its smallest molecule, you atomize it, vaporize it, and send it into the combustion chamber that's already preheated to 300 degrees Fahrenheit. And then when that water hits, it will instantaneously flash the steam, and the pressure of the compression would begin to literally separate the hydrogen and oxygen on demand. When that occurs, then that hydrogen and oxygen will actually release a electrical charge, and at some point would create an implosion with the hydrogen and an explosion with the oxygen. So you would get a lot of powerful forces inside that piston. At that point, you'd even actually have to back the fuel off some, so that you wouldn't be using too much fuel in there. You could seriously regulate the temperature inside the cylinder by using the known laws of physics and hydrodynamics and how water cools and how it does what it does. This is not science fiction. It's science fact. It's all based on things that are already proven, that are already out there on the market. If properly engineered, water would be the perfect fuel. You would design the engine to specifically use water as a fuel. We have induction heating that can preheat the cylinder rapidly. Using that same induction heater, you can water cool that induction coil to actually, when the water's coming through there, raise the temperature of that water up to pre-treat it before it ever even gets atomized and then vaporized into the combustion chamber. Now, when you try to talk to a mechanic about this, they look at you with the crooked eye, because they don't understand the concept of what you're trying to say, because the school books doesn't say it's possible. And they're always trying to say that, well, you know, the physics, the second law of thermodynamics, blah, blah, giving you all kinds of reasons why it can't be done, when in fact it can be done. So once you understand how energy works, and you understand that every single material out there is a form of energy, it's a form of fuel, then there's no reason why perfect systems could not be designed that would literally do the job necessary to solve the so-called global warming / climate change craziness. Now, there's all kinds of different ways that we can tap into nature without ever even disrupting nature. Nature's always going to put the volcanoes out there. Nature's always going to have the thermal vents. Nature's always going to have the wind blowing, the water flowing, and the energies from all the different types of frequency waves that occur throughout natural things. Everything from vibrations on the ground, seismic activity, and even man-made radio waves can be captured and can be stored and utilized. Just because right now you can't run your house off of a radio signal does not mean that that is not energy. Every single radio wave out there is energy. And once you understand that when you throw nature off balance, nature will slap it back down the other direction. And that force of slapping it back down is what we actually get work done with. So, we know how to throw nature off balance. We do it with lead acid batteries all the time. There is as much energy potential in one dead lead acid battery as there is in one completely charged lead acid battery. What we did was we took and put a charge to that battery and threw the plates off of balance now. Now nature wants to balance that battery back out, and in order to balance that battery back out, nature needs a path for those electrons to flow back to the other side until that all that energy is leveled out back to where it's supposed to be. And the moment you turn that light bulb on and complete that circuit, you allow the electrons to be able to flow back in the other direction. And when the final electron gets across there, then you put your voltmeter on there. There's no more electron flow. You will get a zero voltage. And we understand all that. And so now we know that we can actually throw nature off balance in order to get what it is that we want, which is the electricity, but we also know that we don't necessarily have to throw nature off balance, because we can use things like thermal electrics that occur naturally in nature, thermal vents. It's been done. I mean, there's people in the world that are doing it. There are solar panels out there, people running 50% of their countries off of solar energy, wind energy. And if you can get past all the naysayers and all the different types of energies available out there, if you can get past them long enough to actually just build devices, then, you know, if they don't like the way it looks, you know, there's artists out there who can design it to be, you know, a work of art. Beautiful. Hey, yeah, it looks good, man. You know, you wouldn't even know it was a power plant. But in all of this that we've talked about today, energy is being used in completely the wrong manner. What we classify as loss is probably one of the most powerful forces out there, heat. heat is a powerful force. And if it wasn't a powerful force, then the heat generated by the nuclear power plant, the highly refined radioactive rods, wouldn't be a question. The heat generated by the coal fire power plants wouldn't be a question. See, we're still using old 1800s technology steam generation, where they used to shovel coal into a boiler system to produce the steam to run the engine. We're still boiling water to produce heat, heat enough to flash this water into a gas, which is steam, and use that pressure that is then in turn generated to get work done. So the type of plasma reactor that I'm suggesting is using all the forces that we already know exist and the noble gases that are safe. If for some reason the reactor cracks, it just basically stops the reaction altogether. You're using a high frequency, high voltage to energize any of the noble gases into the fourth state of matter, being plasma, and then you take that plasma heat energy generated from it to literally move that heat away and use it to turn it back into electricity. See, physics says energy can neither be created nor destroyed. So where does it go? What it also says, though, even though it cannot be created nor destroyed, it can be changed into multiple different forms. I mean, you could change energy into a completely different frequency range. And since we know voltage is pressure, the higher the voltage, the higher the pressure, we can charge capacitors, and modern-day capacitor technology is getting mind-blowing. The charge and discharge rate of the modern-day capacitor are incredible and only getting better, using things like graphene technology or hemp battery technology and such. You would be surprised at what we're going to be able to be capable of. Free energy will actually make it to the market. It literally will, but it won't be in the people's hands at this rate, at this stage in the game, because the people aren't understanding that they've had the holy grail of free energy sitting right in front of them all along, and they won't band together long enough to actually start producing devices that they can then in turn try to market out there into the real world, you know, and show the world that it's possible. Instead, we allow big, huge research companies to do all the research, to patent all the research, and keep it all together and figure out ways to charge you for utilizing the power that's produced by these particular machines. Now, there's been a lot of shenanigans out there in the alternative energy communities, and, you know, people producing bogus devices and calling it free energy and basically making everybody look bad while they, in turn, you know, rack up some money using advertising on their YouTube channels or whatever. And then you also have the scam artists out there like Keshi, who's promising the world everything under the sun and then some. And then telling everybody he's the Messiah on top of that, and not producing. Basically stealing from people. What I do here at Mad Science is point out the obvious. We already have proof of free energy. We already have the technology and all the pieces of the puzzle to literally build exactly what I've been talking about. And if you don't want to, you know, invest in plasma type technology, as I explained, as far as energizing any noble gases into the fourth state of matter, then utilize static electricity. Because the Van de Graaff generator, the Lord Kelvin generator, the Hauksbee device, those have been technologies that's been around forever. And you can take all the knowledge that you've learned on how electrons exchange due to friction of two different types of materials exchanging electrons, and you can literally build one that the atmosphere itself is all the only moving part in the entire deal. Mimicking nature to the extent that you're actually learning how nature's functioning and utilizing what you've learned to get what it is that you want, the electricity that gives you the luxuries of your refrigeration and heating and cooling. And not only that, we also talk about here on Mad Science alternative ways that you can do air conditioning. You know, if you think of HVAC, heating and cooling, and you think about the heat exchange processes that occur and how they are able to basically compress a gas and then run that gas into an expansion chamber and allow it to expand so rapidly that it produces the complete opposite effect of heat, which is cooling, and then you have air conditioning in your house, that same process could be mimicked by nature. You could literally build a system that would pressurize, you know, water and turn the water into steam, enough steam pressure, then turn around and let that steam pressure, when it gets up to a certain amount of pressure, the PSI gets high enough to trip a valve. The valve would literally open up and allow that hot steam into an expansion chamber, and that rapid expansion of steam into that expansion chamber would give the opposite effect and flash that water right back in, that steam right back into water again, causing a cooling effect on the opposite side. So the sun beating down on a box that has water inside the box would heat that water up to the extent that finally boils away into steam, building up pressure, and then when the pressure gets high enough, it pops a valve and rushes it into an expansion chamber and a condenser, and then recirculates the water that was just utilized back into the system using pumps or gravity, or even a thermal siphon. If you go look at some of the safety devices of some of the different Japanese power plants, they actually had thermal pumps for their safety backup, that when something got too hot, that it would use the temperature difference between the cooling water and the hot water to create a thermal siphon and pump the water without no electricity. So the technology's there. It's been there all along. And you get the right team together, you'll be able to accomplish things that you didn't think were possible using basic science, proven physics, proven technology that has been in existence since way back in the 1800s and potentially prior. So, if you're worried about coal, if you're worried about oil, diesel fuels, any type of the so-called fossil fuels, which is a complete and utter misnomer. There's no way that this world will ever run out of what they classify as fossil fuel. It's not possible. It's not physically possible. You can't burn it fast enough to get rid of it all. It's as simple as that. Until this world stops doing what it does, you're never going to run out of oil. So, with that said, all these fuels, the machines that utilize these fuels could be re-engineered to be so incredibly efficient that there would be absolutely no waste coming out the other side. Zero waste. So, here on Shaziz Mad Science, I talked about the Zero Waste Project, where essentially I'd like to put together a community that every single thing in that community, there's absolutely no waste. When the generators are running, even the heat is utilized. Everything that nature has already provided for us would be utilized in such an efficient manner that there would be absolutely no waste. Such as, let me give you an example. When you burn firewood, you got to go out and buy more firewood. But in the process of burning that firewood, you generate more materials. Because keep in mind, science said that energy could neither be created nor destroyed. So when you burnt that firewood, all you did was change the chemistry of it. All you did was change the makeup of it. You created more elements. Just the wood ash alone, there are several different uses for it, one of which is being used for making lye soap. Using the wood ash to basically fertilize your garden. You just have to Google it up. Look it up. Look at all the different uses for wood ash. And even in the chimney itself, the crud that builds up inside the chimney, if you allow this, what they call creosote, to build up in the chimney of your wood stove, and eventually the fire gets close enough to that creosote, it will literally start a chimney fire. So, while burning wood for fuel, you created a new fuel, and you created a waste product such as wood ash, and even in some instances for wood that wasn't completely burned, activated charcoal, which could be used to basically filter water with. You produced multiple different deals just in the process of burning that wood. So had the majority of the people out there paid attention in science class, they would have realized that we have an overabundance of resources. It's amazing what nature has accomplished. As far as food, if we ever run out of food, it's only because we chose to do so. It's not going to be because nature didn't provide the nutrients in the soil that we needed to grow things. We had the capabilities of growing things in the worst possible conditions. We have the capabilities using hydroponics and aquaponics, one where you're just using water circulating, one where you're actually growing fish in the same system that's recirculating, and it's utilizing the waste that the fish, when the fish eat the food, they poo in the doggone water, which then in turn is circulated back up and goes down to add nutrients to the soil for the plants to grow. It's amazing. And so every single piece of the puzzle necessary to resolve the so-called energy crisis of the world has been in play for so long. That's why I call it mad science. It's frustrating. It's frustrating as all get out because I'm sitting here and I paid attention in science class, and I got trolls that run around and tell me how stupid I am while I'm sitting there showing them the answer to the question that the world has posed, said that we had a problem. When people like myself step forward to address this problem, you know, some folks are out there trying to put together the holy grail of free energy. They want to prove over unity. They want to prove zero point. We don't even need to try to get out more than we're putting in. We just need to be able to utilize the forces of nature in such an efficient manner that it don't take much to keep it going. So, in the whole process, the terminology of free energy got kind of misplaced. You know, zero point is you don't put nothing in and you get something out. Over unity is you get out more than you put in. Free energy is what nature has already provided. When's the last time you got a bill from the sun? When's the last time you got a bill from the wind? When's the last time you got a bill from a thermal vent or a volcano or a raging river? Free energy is all around us in so many different forms, it's not even remotely funny. But the ridiculousness that you have to contend with on a regular basis, from government paid trolls to just the average knucklehead that didn't pay attention to science, to the overeducated goon out there in college that doesn't understand it because the laws of physics that was taught in the school books are supposedly written in stone, and they're not willing to step outside the box for fear that they will be ridiculed by other people of their same education level. Which is all ridiculous, because these folks out there are incredibly brilliant, and they can quote the laws of physics to you verbatim, yet they can't take that brilliance and step outside the box long enough to understand that anything out there could be engineered as fuel, and anything out there could have a machine properly engineered to run off of that specific type of fuel. When you understand how water functions, water is the most stable molecule on the planet. All right, well, heat is one of the things that interacts with water that causes water to do different things. You can boil water using heat. You can boil water so rapidly that if it continues to boil, it will begin to evaporate, pressurize in the form of steam. And then you can use the heat to get literal ignition. If you go back and you think about all the disasters that have ever occurred at a nuclear power plant, what was the key word that they said? What happened? They got a hydrogen explosion. They had anywhere from 1200 or 650 psi to 1200 psi going on, superheated steam. And when it overpressurized and could not blow through the pipe from just the pressure alone, the moment that pressure got high enough to pop any seal on there, and that hot superheated steam went out there, between the compression ignition and between any remote spark that would have occurred when the hydrogen and oxygen was being separated, just the same method by which they actually do hydrogen fuel cells, itself combusted into a hydrogen explosion and tore things apart. Now, knowing that, why would you want to build a highly refined radioactive rod and start to boil water with it using old 1800 style technology such as steam generation, when you know that at some point, if something went wrong, that if you did not keep those rods cool, that though they would continue to deplete to the extent that they finally melted down, and that extreme heat would cause extreme pressure, which would cause compression ignition and a hydrogen explosion, and kapow, now you just blew radioactive material all over the place. And people wonder why I get crazy. That's why. We're still boiling water. We're still pressurizing it, and we're using it to turn turbines, which turns generator heads, which in turn gives us the electricity that keeps us hot and cold. Keeps our food cold. Every bit of technology necessary to run your refrigerator uses a thermal heat exchange system. Every bit of technology available that it uses any kind of air conditioning, heating, or cooling uses a thermal heat exchange system. Thermoelectrics, same thing. You're utilizing the forces of nature, one being heat, one being cool, those temperature differences, and nature will always try to balance itself out. If you got hot on one side, you got cold on the other side, the process of balance itself out, when that finally the one side becomes the same temperature as the opposite side, whether it be hot or cold, in that process there's energy flowing, until that process comes to a halt. When it finally comes to a halt, then nature's balanced back out and the condition is considered to be off. The machine's down. It's not working. That's what nature does. You see, water will always find its level. So if you put water up on a hill and you run a pipe down and it's got the only exit is on the other side of that hill, that water will fall down the hill from the water pressure and it will find its level on the opposite side and nature will be balanced out until you put an external force to pressurize it back up the hill and allow it to go back the other direction. So we could actually utilize that in the form of air pressure. When the water's falling down, let's say you got a 300-foot hill on one side, you got a 300-foot hill on the other side, and you push the pressure of the water up to one side, and as that water's falling, it will produce air pressure inside the hose right there that will then pressurize a tank that you can turn and reuse that air pressure, and as that water's falling down through turbines, it's producing electricity. And all it's doing is seesawing back and forth, while nature tries to balance itself out every time you throw it off balance. So there's all kinds of mechanical ways that we could actually do this. And once again, every single bit of technology has already been proven. We've already got devices that utilize certain of the forces. There are, in the modern day washing machines, direct drive stator motors, permanent magnet, that can be utilized to make generator heads. They're already built. So instead of junking the thing and sending it down to the scrap heap, you take out the parts that you can reuse, and you use it to generate electricity, and you get creative on how you do it. Either turn it into a wind turbine or a water turbine or using any force of nature to actually get this thing to turn around and give you the electricity necessary to charge batteries and run inverters that run your house. So as far as free energy and utilizing what you've already got out there, it's just about creativity. It's... You know, when somebody built a kite, the first kite, and they got it up in the air, and that thing was flying up there in the air. Throughout the years, people engineered ways to build better kites, bigger kites, and even kites that humans could fly on. You know, you jump off the side of a mountain and hang on to this kite. They call it hang gliding. But either way, it was that one idea that expanded all the way to the point where that man's now jumping off the side of a mountain flying this kite down to the ground. Every one of these little anomalies that I show in all these different crazy videos that I put out there on my YouTube channel, if you take that one little idea and you expand on it, there's no limit to where you can go. And if you take multiples of those ideas and you run them in conjunction with each other, the only limitation that you have to your creativity is the willingness to go outside the box and see if it can work or not. And utilizing some of the knowledge that other people have already researched in order to expand on your research. Folks, I keep telling everybody that I'm looking for the dream team. And the dream team is you. It's each and every one of y'all's skills and your talents put together. You know, I keep saying one man doesn't build a house. Even though a man has enough knowledge about how a house is built to literally build a house, what about the ones who dug the materials out of the ground, who milled the materials or, you know, whatever? All these people who were involved in making the materials and creating this house, you'd be amazed at how many people it took to build that one house. even though the one man with his hammer and his saws and his skills went out there and they built the house and then he plumbed it and painted it and all that kind of stuff. Every bit of the paint was through some factory that had a bunch of workers that put materials together to make this material the way it was. It was the researchers involved in making the material, last longer in ultraviolet light or whatever. The strength of the materials, all the research that went into all the materials just by themselves, and not to mention the fact that the people that had to move the materials via trucks and trains and all that to the hardware store, which then in turn their employees moved it around. So many people went into building that house that it's incredible. And it all started from one idea. And so every one of these little ideas of basic science that you learn about, how static electricity is generated, or, you know, air pressure, vacuums. I did a couple videos called Physics Toys, and you look at these physics toys and you can see some pretty cool things in there. Like how I could pressurize a balloon. If I stopped the airflow on one side, you couldn't even blow the balloon up, but you take your finger off of it, you're able to blow the balloon up. And then you put your finger back on the hole and then let go, and that balloon will stay inflated because of the vacuum on the opposite side. Then you can close the lid of the container and take your finger off the hole, and you could hear the vacuum release on the one side, but the balloon would stay inflated on the inside until you open that cap back up and release that pressure out. So you just had stored energy in there that I set on the shelf for about a month at a time, and that thing would still have stored energy in it in the form of air pressure. And that one little toy was showing something that I've been saying all along. Any type of energy can be stored and utilized for a later date. Nature will only be able to balance it out if nature has a path to do so. The same thing applies with electrons. Same thing applies with water pressure. You know, when you go to your sink and you turn your knobs off, hopefully your seals are holding up and the water pressure behind it will hold the water back. But the moment you crack that open, you give nature a path, and that water will begin to automatically go try to find its level. It will go out, wash your hands, you'll get work done, it'll go down the drain, it'll go down through the system, and somewhere on this planet, wherever that water level ends up, it will always find its level. That's what nature does. And so, everything we need to produce a clean, renewable, alternative, sustainable, or whatever terminology makes you feel good out there, in perfect harmony with nature. We have the tools, we have the technology, we have the skill. There is not one missing piece of the puzzle, with the exception of the people, we the people, willing to get together in networks and build devices using everything that we've learned and get the job done. So, free energy will come to market. It will definitely, without a doubt, you will see it within your lifetime. You'll see clear solar panels out there that you can embed in any window of your house and turn your entire house into a generating system. You'll see new technologies that we have been talking about on Mad Science since the Mad Science show started. They will be patented by the corporations out there. They will be sold to you. The energy that they generate will be sold to you, but it will, without a doubt, be in the mainstream market. Because they have created such a ruckus right now, saying the planet is in dire need, that They have basically let Pandora's box open. And now that all that information's out there in the world, the question is, who's going to control it when it's all said and done? Is it going to be we, the people, and us not paying the electric bill? Or is it going to be the corporations and the power industries of the world? Stan Myers proved that you could run a car on water. The Mythbusters tried to debunk it and failed. And a lot of brilliant minds out there tried to debunk it and failed. Those folks out there who are interested in the truth have pointed it out for a long time. Basic science tells you that water is hydrogen and oxygen, both separated or fuel. The college-educated goons out there that have studied physics and science in modern day college, they believe themselves to be so intelligent that the book is the equivalence of their Bible. Now, that's terrible to say, but it's the truth. Education system has literally failed the people of this world. The ones out there who were properly educated are the ones that the government of the world and all the corporations are trying to grab up as much as possible to put all these super minds into their labs to come up with new developments that will give them the balance of power continuously. You think about what I just said. Stan Myers, whether you believe it's a conspiracy theory or not, was heard exclaiming that somebody poisoned him as he was leaving a restaurant. And it was not too long after said military decided they wanted to use his technology in their equipment. Well, now they're talking about how the military, by 2017, I believe it was, that's this year, would begin to start running their Navy ships off of hydrogen technology. Imagine that. You're floating on the fuel that you need, and that opens up a big area to where you no longer have to store fuel on your ship any longer. One of two things. You either leave that space empty, or now you have more storage space, or you leave it empty so that you have a lighter ship that doesn't take near as much, and so you can get going a little bit faster than before. There's all kinds of possibilities. But nonetheless, hydrogen cars are real. Hydrogen cells are real. Hydrogen technology, whether you want to go for the electrolysis process of separating the water, whether you want to go for sound waves, radio waves, or compression, ignition, and heat. You know, they say, well, you know, you can't compress water. No, you can't, because it's a liquid. But if you change the state of that liquid, just like in a diesel engine, imagine that. Diesel fuel is a liquid. And when it's in its liquid state, you can't just push it into the piston, because you will cause it to lock up. So what you have to do with that diesel fuel is preheat it, atomize it, and then send it into the combustion chamber in a vapor. The pressure and the heat, When you very first start up a diesel engine, they have a glow plug. That glow plug brings the cylinder up to operating temperature. Several hundred degrees, probably. Once it's up to operating temperature, between the compression, creating more heat, and the oxygen and the fuel being introduced into that hot, now hot cylinder produces the combustion in the form of compression ignition. Now, the folks that say that you can't use water for fuel in a gasoline engine as it's designed right now are telling the truth. Without modifications, without the electrolysis process, without using sound waves, you can't run water in the standard engine the way it's designed. But you can retrofit that same engine to utilize the waste energy to, in turn, do the separation before it ever even reaches the combustion chamber. By the time that engine gets up to its operating temperature, and the average engine is anywhere from 160 to 180 to 220 degrees Fahrenheit, water will begin to boil at about 100 degrees, or 212, I believe it is. Depends on, I guess, sea level and all that. So at 212 degrees, it'll begin to boil and turn to steam. So if your radiator isn't doing its job, that engine will get up over 200 degrees rapidly. You can use that heat energy to pre-treat that water fuel before it ever even gets up there, using atomizing technology and sonic vaporizing technology. You can break that water down into its smallest molecule. Once that temperature, that cylinder is up to operating temperature, and then you inject that super fine mist of water down inside there, it will instantaneously expand 1600 times its volume inside there, producing pressure to push that piston down. As that piston's coming back up, it's still doing the same exact thing. You're not putting enough water into that system to cool that system down. You're only putting a super fine mist inside there. So it's still a compressible gas, and it still has the potential for compression ignition. So even the modern engine that's designed specifically to run off of gasoline or diesel or propane or butane or whatever fuel that they're running on, those engines were able to be retrofitted to run off of multiple different fuels. Like a diesel engine will run off of multiple different fuels. A gasoline engine will run off of multiple different fuels. If you have a gasoline engine and you modify the carburetor system, you change the jets in it, you can go from burning gasoline to burning alcohol, or burning just a gas like propane, butane, and methane. It's all in the way that you engineered it from the get-go, and the modifications that are capable of being made in the long term. So, at some point in time, you're going to see an engine that runs on pure water. You're going to see it. But it's only going to be come about whenever the power structure is in the hands of the elitists of the world and the governments of the world, so they can still charge you a fee and taxes on it. So the question is, do you want to take this time in history to beat them to the punch and put that information out there? I used to have this saying all the time, you can't sell a widget if everyone already owns a widget. So, if you have this technology in your hand and you're utilizing it and somebody's trying to sell it to you, you understand what I'm trying to say? Why would you pay for something that you could already get for free? That's the key. Now, to go off the power grid to run the inefficient stuff that you got sitting on there, and if you're going to wait around for the holy grail of energy devices to come to the market, that you can just go out and buy and plug into your house and get off the power grid? Well, your best bet is solar and wind at this point in the game, because that's about all they're going to let you have. Anything past that, any new technologies, is up to the innovation of the people out there. And so if you want to get it done, you're going to have to put together a dream team and network. Yeah, I have to figure out who in your community is a welder. Who in your community is a manufacturer, somebody who can run a mill, a lathe, a 3D printer, somebody who's good with electrical. You find the best of the best in your communities and you bring them together and you tell them what it is that you're trying to do. You got people like me out here that will give you all kinds of ideas for free. And with those ideas, if you're willing to run with them, then there isn't nothing that you can't accomplish. You know, one man by himself might be able to do some amazing things. But if you get a group of the most brilliant minds in your community together, with a specific purpose is to engineer things that are going to make people's lives better, and you'll get it done. But if you call your government up and you ask, hey, Mr. Government, Mrs. Government, I need some resources to do this and whatever, and they find out what you want to do it for, they like the tax money off the fossil fuel industry. They like the tax money off the coal-fired power plants. They like the tax money off the nuclear industry. And they like to try to find regulations in order to tax you on solar panels that you've already bought. They like to try to find ways to penalize you for doing what it is that they said needed to be done. You needed clean, renewable, alternative energy in order to save the planet from so-called big bad wolf, the so-called global warming, slash climate change, slash climate disruption, or whatever it's going to be next week when the math doesn't add up. And they also warned you about the hole in the ozone layer. Never mind the fact that lightning strikes all over this planet all day long, every day, producing yet even more ozone layer. Nonetheless, ignoring basic science and telling the world lies is how the governments and the corporations and the power companies of the world have stayed in power and made the money that they've made. Tesla wanted to give people free wireless energy. Van de Graaff showed everybody how to literally reproduce lightning. And I could go on and on and on. Stan Myers driving around the car back in the 70s running on water. And all the folks out there who came up with free energy devices or alternative energy that would do anything to remotely remove tax money from any of the individuals out there that were just mentioned, and some of which you weren't mentioned, they didn't fare so well, and humanity didn't back them up. When you find a Stan Myers in your neighborhood, you put a ring of safety around that person and you protect them and their knowledge and share that knowledge with as many people as possible, as rapidly as possible, in order to keep them safe. Because if you think that the oil companies and the power companies of the world and the governments of the world and the corporations of the world would not bring them harm in order to ensure that their power structure and their wallet would stay fat, then you're fooling yourself. We have every single answer to every single question to resolve every single issue under the sun. When the world's ready to do so, guys like me and others out here that are doing and saying the same exact thing will step forward and share these ideas like we've been doing all along. So with that said, I think it's time for a music break. I'm just going to throw a long song on there that I throw on here all the doggone time because it's like 10 minutes long. And I need a break. Maybe somebody will call in after the break or something. If I can find a doggone song. But everything that I've talked about is all proven science. When the world's ready to do it, we'll get it done. In the meantime, we'll keep doing the Mad Science Show. Peace and love, everybody. Stay tuned.
Get off the shit.
Never mind that.
Why, that's me. Look at me. I'm an old man.
Hey, I'm Dr. Emmett Brown. I'm standing here on the parking lot.
Thank God I still got my hair. What on earth is this thing I'm wearing?
Wow, this is a radiation suit.
Radiation suit? Of course. Because of all the fallout from the atomic wars. This is truly amazing. A portable television studio. No wonder your president has to be an actor. He's got to look good on television.
Whoa, this is it. This is the part coming up, Doc.
No. This sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
What did I just say?
The flux capacity stores... This sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
1.21 gigawatts! 1.21 gigawatts! Great Scott! What
the hell is a gigawatt?
How could I have been so careless? 1.21 gigawatts! Tom, how am I going to generate that kind of power? It can't be done, can it?
But all we need is a little plutonium.
Oh, I'm sure that in 1985, plutonium was available in every corner drugstore, but in 1955, it's a little hard to come by. Marty, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid you're stuck here.
Whoa, Doc, stuck here? I can't be stuck here. I got a life in 1985. I got a girl.
Is she pretty?
Oh, she's beautiful. She's crazy about me. Look at this. Look what you wrote here, Doc. I mean... That says it all. Doc, you're my only hope.
Marty, I'm sorry, but the only power source capable of generating 1.21 gigawatts of electricity is a bolt of lightning.
What did you say?
A bolt of lightning. Unfortunately, you never know when or where it's ever going to strike.
We do now.
This is it. This is the answer. It says here that a bolt of lightning is going to strike the clock tower precisely 10:04 p.m. next Saturday night. If we could somehow harness this lightning, channel it into the flux capacitor, it just might work. Next Saturday night, we're sending you back to the future.
Are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Name is going on in here.
What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
We'll be right back.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Yeah, give me a number for 911 too, man. I gotta call the cops. Anyway, so we had a brilliant discussion on the break. You're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html. And if you ever want to come on the show, just add me on Skype and add whoever's on the radio at the time on Skype, and then you can join them. So, Jermaine, we were talking about how you were sweating over there because it was hot.
Oh, yeah.
Out of that discussion came an idea such as being able to use the body's normal temperature, which is 98.6 degrees, and the knowledge of whatever liquids that we've got, such as alcohol, that would have low vaporization points, you know, basically the equivalence of how a thermometer would work to build pressure. Then we also talk about when we got the pressure built up, that we could use the thermal heat exchange system to literally allow that thing, when it get to a certain pressure, pop a relief valve that would allow that pressure to be instantaneously released into the opposite chamber, inside an expansion chamber, that would then cause a cooling effect on the other side. What do you think?
Yeah, so essentially it's kind of like I said before, it's like instead of a combustion chamber that uses a piston to generate compression, you're using the expanding fluid as the piston.
And that expanding fluid, if vaporized and pressurized, would then in turn, when released rapidly, create a cooling effect. You could literally build a shirt that would cool yourself down. And then your sweat glands would never, be triggered, and you wouldn't be sweating all over yourself. What do you think? It sounds sci-fi, man, but the science is there to do it.
But since we use our own body heat, which isn't that big of a difference between the body heat and the normal average temperature, room temperature.
Yep.
You don't need a fluid that, you don't need to know the boiling temperature or the melting temperature of a fluid, since we're on that low of a temperature, and there isn't really that much of a temperature difference between room temperature and body temperature. So we only need to think about what fluid can expand the most.
Yeah, there are certain
temperature difference.
Yeah, there are certain metals that will melt in your hand. Did you know that?
Yeah, gallium.
Yep. And so that type of material right there, if it'll melt in your hand, would also melt in a sealed system that was pressed against your body. So.
Yeah, but it doesn't need to be a metal that is solid in room temperature. It can also be a fluid.
Yep. Like alcohol, for instance, it has a low temperature where it begin to vaporize. And once it vaporizes, that process right there will literally pressurize something. If you have ever looked at like a gas can, you know, like a petrol gas can or whatever, and if it's out there in the sun, you go open that thing up, you'll hear this thing go psst like that, because it's pressurized because of the heat from outside. If you take that same gas can that's sealed up and you go look at it during the winter time, you'll notice that it has collapsed inward.
Yeah.
Yeah, and once you pop that top on there, once again, there's a reverse pressure in there. It's actually on the outside of it, and then it will rush back in and pop that can back out. Pretty cool, huh?
Yeah, I've heard of somebody who had a custom-made tank with no vent hole in the cap.
Yeah.
And during winter time, it just dented in. It created a vacuum.
Yeah.
And pulled metal in.
And that's pretty impressive. There's a lot of force there to suck that metal can in like that.
Yeah.
So now we know there's a couple little ideas right there that could be tinkered around with, and find water, whatever materials, chemicals that have low melting points or low boiling points, and be able to find one that is closest to the body. See, if your body's at 98.6 degrees and it takes 212 degrees Fahrenheit to boil water, then that's obviously not going to be the first one you want to go to, right?
Right.
It's water. But if you have a safe material that is basically will melt in your hand or begin to vaporize in your hand, and there's plenty of them out there that you could literally use to produce pressure in a closed loop system, just like the air conditioner does. The air conditioner has an air compressor that compresses the air, the gas inside the deal, and once that gas is compressed, it obviously generates a lot of heat, so you got to get rid of that heat out the back of the air conditioner.
Or you could just use a Stirling engine attached to your bag with a little fan on it to cool yourself down.
But once that is all pressurized and hot, and then it's allowed to escape rapidly into an expansion chamber, then it produces the complete opposite effect, which is cooling, and now you have air conditioning. So it works both ways, vice versa. But nonetheless, it's just one tiny example of what I've been talking about all day long. We got every single answer to every single question, every single solution, every single problem, at the very least related to energy needs of the world. We don't have we don't have an energy crisis. We got a common sense crisis, as far as I'm concerned. Because all the basic science and all the laws of physics, if utilized properly, you could literally engineer a internal combustion engine or any machine to run off any specific. If you want to use water as fuel, you specifically engineer that engine to do just that. Now, like I was saying earlier on the show, they say, well, you can't compress a liquid, so water isn't going to work. Well, you don't compress it. You use the other forces.
You use the expansion of it.
Yeah. Turn it
into... You're not compressing the liquid. You use the liquid that is expanding to create a pressure, not to compress the liquid.
Yeah, the same way they do in a diesel engine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Diesel engines have compression ignition, and they don't just pump diesel fuel into it and burn it like that. It goes through a warming process, and it also goes through a fuel treatment process that vaporizes or atomizes that fuel into a really fine mist, and then they send it into a preheated hot cylinder, and then once that mist goes in there and begins the burn because of the temperature inside that cylinder, and then all you got to do is keep running that. You see, that's the thing a lot of people don't realize, is that the glow plug doesn't stay on all the time while you're running that diesel engine. It's only used to start it.
Yeah. Because all the compressed air and the explosion of it will just cause it to heat up. But you also have people that are afraid of the water in the radiators with the water jackets to boil.
Yeah.
And the thing is, an engine needs to run warm on a hot temperature, on a high temperature, to perform properly. But they're all afraid of all of the steam that's coming out of the radiator. But the thing is, boiling water doesn't get higher in temperature. It always stays 100 degrees Celsius, and that's something that they don't understand. You don't need to regulate the temperature, you just need to add water, because water is evaporating. It's turning into steam, but it always keeps that 100 degrees Celsius. So you don't need to worry about that. It needs that temperature to work.
Not properly. To mention, if utilized properly, you could utilize that steam instead of having like Freon in your air conditioner. You could use that pressurized steam to do the same expansion that would do the same type of cooling, in a expansion chamber just like your air conditioner functions already.
Right.
So,
but that's the thing, like you said, common sense. Water doesn't get hotter. Boiling water doesn't get hotter than 100 degrees Celsius. So you can just as well use that steam that's produced with the engine's heat, and it doesn't affect the motor, the engine.
Yep. See, if you hooked a generator up to your house that had a water jacket on it, you've already got your heating problem for your house resolved, because you can go back to use old technology, radiator technology, that's still used today, to heat your house. You can use the heat off of that engine to generate thermoelectrics that would run the fan to circulate that heat through your house. That leaves that generator capable of running all kinds of other stuff, lights and stuff like that.
And you don't need an electric pump, because it has a natural siphon. It'll just warm water rise up and come down cold.
You could use thermal siphoning, just like you said right there, or even the doggone onboard mechanical water pump. You know. So, a modern day generator could be utilized in such an efficient manner that generator would never have to work hard. And if you used some oil cooling systems, you could transfer the heat away from that oil so fast that the bearings would never reach their thermal breakdown, and they would never destroy themselves. And if the intake portion of the portion where you, like the carburetor or fuel injection side, was set efficiently, you would get a perfect burn, and you wouldn't get that carbon blow-by that you get that turns your oil black to begin with. So you wouldn't even need an oil filter for this situation.
Right. And today I went to an event with old stationary engines, and there was one from 1907. It was a single cylinder, and it had multiple spark plugs for better ignition.
Yep.
Even back then they knew that it wasn't properly ignited, and so they added a second one.
I'd be willing to bet. Did you check the oil in any of? Did you get to see the oil in any of those after they ran for a while?
Yeah, they're all covered in it.
Yeah, I would be willing to bet, though, that oil would be so much cleaner than even the best modern day engine.
Oh yeah.
Because it's getting a cleaner burn.
Yeah. Yeah.
So most generally, even though you got rings in your car that are pretty well sealed, they're not perfectly sealed, and so that means that you can get a blow by when that combustion is occurring, and that carbon gets sucked down into the oil. That's what turns your oil black. And diesel engines are really bad for it, because they're using compression ignition, but it doesn't ignite like gasoline engine. It burns, and the heat of the expansion of the burning fuel is what pushes the piston down. And the harder you run this engine, the less efficient the fuel system becomes. Because you don't have enough time to burn off all the fuel that you're putting into it. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So just by reengineering.
That's why they use the superchargers, right?
Yeah.
Force air into it,
which will cause it to burn better. But still,
a Ford Sonet from 1917 used a hot plate, where the fuel got through for heating purposes. So it already got preheated, because there was a hot plate where the fuel goes through attached to your exhaust system.
Yeah.
Well, it's been done before.
Yeah, just the temperature of the engine block itself. See, we're circulating water through a water jacket, unless it's an air-cooled motor. But we're circulating water through the water jacket, which is raising the temperature of that fuel up as it's being circulated. If if it ran through the block. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You can literally use the heat of the engine to pre-treat the fuel before you ever even used it.
Yep.
And since it's in a closed-in container and it's not going to be, exposed to oxygen in that particular area, then you're not going to build up enough pressure or have an ignition source while it's running around the block to before it goes into the intake portion.
You're right. Yeah.
So, you know, you and I and Justin can figure this kind of stuff out, and other people that's been on this show can figure this kind of stuff out. You think the mainstream auto industry would be like all up on this kind of stuff? Because, you know, they got regulations that they got to go through. They got to have certain types of fuel economy in the industry in order to, and clean emissions and stuff like that. You'd think that they'd want to figure out the perfect way to burn that fuel.
But why would they want to do that? That makes sense.
Yeah.
We always, for our old timers, we always mix our fuel ourselves.
Yeah.
We use 25 liters, sorry, or gallons, petrol, gasoline, 5 liters benzene, and 1 liter two-stroke. It's an oil that binds different oils together, the two fuels.
Yeah.
And it works really well since it is that an oily fuel. Since the fuel you get out of gas stations is very sharp.
Yeah.
But roughly what? 28 milliliters to 1 liter.
I don't
ratio?
Know.
Oh no, 25 gasoline, 5 benzene, and 1 two-stroke. It's a special oil that binds the two fuels together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See?
At least that's how we do it, and it works great.
Yeah, we have two-stroke.
Better than
the
fuel was straight from the...
Most dirt bikes are two-stroke.
Well, the two-stroke engine, Evinrude has probably the best, world's best two-stroke engine in boat motors. And they have built, like, I think 6 and 8 cylinder versions of this two-stroke motor. But they have a direct injection system that makes them things so fuel efficient and actually gives it more power than all the competition out there. And there was one snowmobile company that kind of took the same type of route as far as technology goes. I can't remember what the name of it, but I mentioned it on a prior show. But you could take the best of every single internal combustion engine out there and modify just engineer a completely new engine that would run off of any type of fuel that you wanted to burn in that thing. And you could do it in such a clean fashion that the emissions out there would be next to zero. You think I'm wrong?
No.
I don't think you're wrong, but electrical is still the way to go.
Well, sure. I mean, there's a lot of, like, DC motors are powerful as all get out, these new washing machine motors.
It never hurts to increase the efficiency of something else, eh?
Well, yeah, see...
No. Like, there's been a lot of things that have been done. Like, with Buddy Danny, we've been talking about springless valves, right? That right there, it gets rid of, you know how hard it is to compress one of those valve springs? You remove all the valve springs and you just put them on a timing, and there you go.
Well,
right there, you're not using 50 horse just to compress all those springs. They've done all these things, and you're right. There is a lot of ways that we can improve the efficiency on a lot of our engines.
We could also use.
They don't want that.
We could also put the valves, Justin.
Took the exhaust and put it back through the engine.
Justin, we could also use for the valves, we could use the actual compression of the piston and the actual, when the piston gets slammed down, it creates a vacuum on the opposite side. We could use that to open and close the valves.
Right, you mean,
But you can't put a vacuum, you can't change, it's not a good idea to play with viscosity of the oil in vacuums because you create cavitations and then it creates internal damage. because cavitation, when cavitation occurs, there's called what a cavitation jet, and it shoots out and it actually cuts into the material.
Well, the key though is that if properly engineered, you could use the forces of what that engine's already doing and not cause the damage. The whole thing is, things don't break down, materials don't break down until they reach their thermal breakdown point. Until that material gets hot enough to become soft enough for another part to start to wear it down, as long as that oil remains at the proper temperature, those bearings will never wear out. And if you ain't got no blow-by going with the carbon, then you're not literally turning your oil into sandpaper, which is destroying your engine. Right. So a good oil cooling system.
The thing is, you don't need one modification to fix it all. You need multiple small modifications that increase the motor by a lot. Just small things, a lot of small things that just increase, like changing your gearbox to one with more gears.
Yeah.
So you don't use your gas pedal to increase your speed, which is very inefficient.
Well, I know you've heard of the technology. If you think about, there's a transmission out there that has two cone-shaped gears that start off small and work their way big.
I've heard of that.
I'm trying
to
remember.
It's a three-letter thing. VH. I'll look it up for you.
Cool. When you find that, shout it out. But either way, you don't even feel it shifting gears. Because of the way that it's designed, these two cone-shaped gears just kind of ride like a corkscrew across each other and raise it up to the highest one until it gets to the end right there. And when you slow down, it goes in the opposite direction. And so that type of deal right there, if properly lubricated, shoot, you'd never burn that transmission out, man. It'd be impossible. You're not using clutch plates or anything like that in there. You're just using that gear to transfer the torque to where you want it. So, you know, with that said, we got the capabilities right now to seriously engineer some vehicles that would last past a lifetime. And using electrical energy like Justin mentioned earlier, you'd be surprised at how fast these doggone electric motors can go. They have incredible torque. The direct drive washing machine are proof of that. They can turn that washing machine with all the water in it and all your wet clothes. Whereas in the old days, they used to have a transmission. There are no transmissions in washers and dryers anymore. It just uses a pulse DC permanent magnet direct drive stator motor in order to deliver the power. Now, if you took that same system out and you incorporated it into, say, like a go-kart, you could turn one of, like, four of those washing machines, you could turn it into a four-wheel drive go-kart using the circuitry that came off of it, and throwing some solar panels and some batteries up there, you could turn that into one heck of a machine.
It's called a CVT system.
A C what?
A CVT system.
CVT. We'll have to remember that for next time we talk about it. But that's a brilliant system, man. Because you can't even feel it shift. And so as far as what you were talking about, you just keep a steady...
Oh, you don't shift.
Yeah. You keep a steady application down on your fuel pedal. You're not on it and then off it and then on it and then off it. Not like that. You're getting better fuel economy because it's just a... You know, step it down until you get as fast as you want and then let off the doggone thing.
CVT, continuously variable transmission.
Yep. I'd love to get a hold of one for a wind turbine type of deal. Because you could start off in the lowest gear and then you can raise that RPMs up and adjust it to where you wanted it to go. Man, there's... If you look at some of the technology available in the cordless drills and saws and stuff like that, all that technology is already on the table. And there is nothing that we haven't talked about that isn't already on the table, that isn't already available for use. And if you take all these pieces of the puzzle and you put them together, you could build the perfect machines out there. It's as simple as that. You know, where if you took your transmission out of a car, out of your automobile, and you tried to run that car directly off the engine itself, you're not going to be able to do it, because whatever weight you got on there, it's not transferring that energy. It will stall that engine out and not be able to run. Unless you get somebody to push start you and get you moving first, the engine will never pull that car. However, with a transmission starting off in the lowest gear all the way to the highest gear, bringing the torque down to higher RPMs as you go, then you're able to move it from point A to point B. So with that said, you can step up if, like say you got a water wheel out there. You take this, did you say CVT transmission?
Yes, CVT.
You take this CVT transmission, and even though that water doesn't have enough power to get that thing up to high RPMs, you can step it up gradually using that transmission to get that thing to spin in rapidly and produce high voltage as opposed to high current. That high voltage in turn could be moved rapidly to store and charge in the equivalents of capacitor banks and, then bled over into battery systems. So you could turn even your hydroelectric dams into so much more power and be able to move that power further for less amount of effort. You see what I mean?
Yep.
So, you know, it's where there's a will, there's a way, man. And just the stuff that we've talked about here today, I mean, it's, I'm telling the world right now, you will see free energy come to the table. It will actually make it to the market, but it will not be in the people's hands. It'll be in the company's hands and the government's hands and all the corporations out there, so that they got ways to tax you for using it. It's as simple as that. Now, if you want to beat them to the punch, we're standing at a crossroad right now where you have access to all this information. You gather the dream team up in your neighborhood, like Justin, he's got his network going on over there, and they're doing a lot of amazing things. And you get other people in your network of like minds that want to develop alternative energy devices, and you share that freely with your community. And when your community gets set up, you share it freely with next community in line. And you do it from people to people. The government already, first off, said that there was a problem and you need to get clean, renewable, alternative energy. But once you started getting solar panels out there, you went out and spent your money on solar and wind. Suddenly, this was a problem because now they're getting less money as tax revenue because you're not paying as much in your fuel cost.
I thought Elon Musk is doing a really good job with everything. The solar shingles that he are making, and he's making batteries that, you know,
well, sure.
Support the system completely.
But the key to this, Justin, is that he and his company and his investors are making the money off of it. Sure.
Yeah, somebody's got to make money somewhere, and you know what? Well, they're employed people, right?
Yeah, well, that's...
That's what makes everything go around. It's a trade-off.
Yeah, but see, here's the thing, man.
A lot of people don't have the capability to build things or to even make those things, right?
Well, that's a good excuse for why not to try something. But if you got a bunch of people in your community that all have knowledge on different things, you got a welder, you got an electrician, and you guys get together and you build this. Just the savings alone, once you guys get completely energy independence, will still benefit you to the extent now you can share that idea or even sell that idea to somebody down the road and still be able to earn a living.
I agree that there is no more mom and pop shops and that there should be more, but the world is in a constant movement. It's going to change, and we're going through a new change. We're going to see a lot of things in the next 5 years. It's, yeah.
Sure we will.
I see it.
But the question is, is that change going to be for the betterment of the people, or is it going to be better for the betterment of the establishment that's been in charge all along?
Look, yeah. Michael Jackson saying they don't really give up about us, and then you got Tupac screaming that the community is in need. We've had famous people, even what's his name there, that Robert Williams. You know, like, we've had so many famous people that have money and have tried to speak out as well.
Well, the best way to speak out is like you and I and Jermaine are doing right now, is to educate the people in things that we've researched throughout the time, and to try to motivate them into getting networks involved in their own communities and taking all this knowledge, all these pieces of the puzzle. Like, for example, if everybody went out and bought them a generator that had a water jacket on it right now, and they went out and they modified this water jacket to circulate the water through their entire house, through radiator systems, they could use that hot water for heating and cooling, and they could basically save money on their heating and cooling bill just by running that one generator. And by running that one generator the way it was normally ran, to run electricity to then in turn heat your house with resistive elements and electric heaters, is inefficient, and it would cost you more fuel in order to keep that generator running as long. But if you took that system and you were taking away the waste heat off of it through the oil and through the water and using that heat to heat your house, now the only amount of electricity that you're utilizing is coming from, you know, whatever lighting you run or fan system that you want to run or whatever. But then even in that, you could take the electricity off of that generator using the plasma reactor system that I talked about, and turning that energy into yet even more heat that you can turn into thermoelectrics that can then in turn run the stuff that we're talking about. So you could modify an existing generator to be so incredibly efficient that the average Joe could afford to run it. And by modifying the intake portion of that generator itself to where instead of putting that fuel in there into a liquid stream, you atomize it and vaporize it to its smallest molecule, put it down into essentially a fog going inside the carburetor or the fuel injector, and get a cleaner burn out of it and burn less fuel yet even more. You see what I mean? These are things that the average Joe can do.
I think most of the average Joes and Janes are worried about high heels and golf clubs.
Well, maybe so, man, but if the world is in the state that it is and people want to have the power for the people, then the people have to get proactive, and that's why we're out here preaching to the world. To tell them, look, it's right there. All the answers, the puzzle pieces are right there. Let's put these puzzle pieces together and let's benefit our communities so that we're not using near the fuel. We'll get a perfect clean burn and there is no waste coming out of this whole entire deal. I explain on how when you burn a piece of firewood, you don't destroy that firewood completely. It's energy that's still, minus whatever tiny little particles make it up via the heat rising through your chimney, you can even filter that chimney to re-grab whatever makes it up the chimney. But when you burn that piece of firewood, according to our science, it says energy can neither be created nor destroyed. You just took that firewood and you just changed it into a completely different form of matter, into chemistry. The wood ash can be used for multiple deals, not excluding soap. And you can use the creosote that's actually built up in there, which is a completely new form of fuel. The heat that goes up the chimney could be reused. The heat that's already been circulating through your house could be reused. The firebox itself could be made so incredibly efficient that a little tiny stick of wood as opposed to a huge log of wood would transfer that heat. The types of material, such as copper, being a really good conductor of not only electricity, but it's also a good conductor of heat. We could make every single thing, including a wood stove, so incredibly efficient that it wouldn't be no waste. And as far as firewood, I mean, nature tears trees down all the time. You don't even have to cut down a new tree in order to gather up firewood. You can just gather up the sticks that fall in your yard to run this machine. You see what I mean? That's the simplicity of the deal. The solution is so incredibly simple that it's mind-blowing. It just takes a little bit of rethinking on how you use the things. Now, these folks that you mentioned, Justin, about going out and buying new high heels or whatever, or toys, PlayStations, whatever, if they don't have to pay an electric bill or a heating bill because they've done it so efficiently that, it's pretty much self-contained, that gives them a whole lot more money for a whole lot more shoes. You see what I'm saying?
That's the thing. You know, I dated a girl and she brought a blow dryer and a pair of high heels camping. So do you think she has anywhere near the aptitude of creating something or partaking in something? Not that she's a bad woman by any means. She's a great woman, but you see, people are lost in their own abilities to their what they thrive on.
Well, that's right? Why
there's people out there that are master Lego castle builders, right? And skateboarders and snowboarders, and that's what they do.
That's right.
We all have our unique individual thing, right? But they don't care about all the other nonsense. They'd rather go to a 9-to-5 and push a button and push a button and push a button. And, oh my God!
When the guy takes the 3D printer and the trash out of the dump and 3D prints a whole bunch of blocks that are the equivalents of Legos, then you go find that Lego master to start his own industry building houses out of that recycled material.
Yeah.
Not even the people you're talking about are wasted talents. It doesn't matter what they do.
Anybody's a waste.
But what I'm trying to point out is, even though these folks out there are so distracted with whatever, you lead by example like you do in your community with your church deal that, you know, you guys get things accomplished. You got tools, you got technology, you got people knowledgeable enough to run the things, and you're leading by example in a community that if you succeed, people will follow, and that's the whole point. Find the brilliant minds of the world. Find the people willing to step outside the box and re-engineer things. And find the people of this world that want to make the world a better place and start a network with them.
Right.
Get them in your community.
There's people out there that are on radio shows, have their own radio shows. They're in their communities that are doing all these things everywhere around the world, right? And that's exactly what I'm doing. But I'm not here to tell anybody anything.
Guide.
I'm here just to do and make it happen. And I don't need to find people. People will find me people will see it.
Then there's no point for you to come on the radio show and talk about it because you've already got it situated. But if you want to share those concepts and those ideas with other people, then there is a need for you to come on the radio and share what you've done with your community. See, that's what we're doing here. That's what the whole Mad Science Show is about, to show people that there are answers out there. There are solutions out there. If we want to resolve the so-called climate change issues of the world or energy crises or resources, whatever type of resource you want to talk about. If people ain't out there trying to educate the other people out there and show them that, look, hey, there's an option here. You don't have to use highly refined radioactive rods to boil water. You can do it with this over here or that over there. There's, you know, like you mentioned earlier about spinning water around. Cavitation. You can build a device that will take an electric motor and a flywheel with holes drilled in it, and you can cause that water to create an intentional water hammer and a cavitation effect that will raise that water up to a boiling point, and you could pressurize it into steam that you could then in turn run turbines and so on and so forth. What we're here to do is point out to the world what they do with that information is all up for them. But if they want to be part of fixing the world, then they need to jump on the bandwagon in their own communities, take these ideas and run with them. That's what it's all about. I can't do nothing about the people that don't want to do nothing.
What if I was to say that two-thirds of all gasoline motors will be replaced within the next 15 years, and two-thirds of America's homes will be all solar panels within the next 15 years?
Well,
see, Elon Musk is in a situation, in the position that he's in, because he's made deals and shook hands with people that he should never have shook hands with. Right? But you see, this is an improvement on the system, and it's an environmental friendly thing, is that they're saying. Right? This year, he's having a car drive from the West Coast all the way to the East Coast by itself.
Well, that's why. Right?
He's proving all of the things that everybody's talking about. He's made the shingles. They're shingles, not solar panels. They're individual shingles. The things that he's doing are going to improve the system. But the words I'm using is system. It's still like you're saying, yes, it's all in the benefit for them to maintain control over, if you want to say, primitive sheeple or whatever people want to call each other, because we really are truly primitive. You know, I can get a monkey to floss its teeth.
Well, good luck with that. But if you do, I want to watch the video because it'd probably be pretty amusing. Nonetheless, it's the difference between, do you want it in the mainstream industry, mainstream government, or the mainstream corporation, or the elitists of the world? Do you want the information in their hands, or do you want to take this time at the crossroads to take it and put it in the people's hands and share all this information while it's freely available? I guarantee you, at some point, this information is going to start being disappeared. It's going to start being scrubbed from the internet. You go look at the science books of today, and then you match them up of the science books of yesterday, and you're going to find that there are things missing in the science book of yesterday, and there are things that aren't even remotely related to science in the science books of today, and so the educational value is depleting. And while you have access to the vast sum of all man's knowledge, like my friend Simply Steve always says, then you need to be able to understand that right now would be the time to take the bull by the horns and basically start creating devices of yourself. Worst case scenario, you build it and the corporation wants you not to sell it. They come over and buy it out from you. You just got rich. All right? And you didn't even have to take it to factory or market or anything like that. You just proved the technology, and they keep buying the devices from you because they don't want it out. They don't want Pandora's box open, because once everybody in the world knows that it can be done, it will be done, and there ain't nothing they can do about it to control it any longer. So you could get rich off of just designing it, proving it'll work. They'll buy it from you. The government will snatch it up or whatever, and you just build another one, because energy is free. We are floating in a sea of unlimited resource and free energy. And there ain't one single person on this planet who can quote anything from any laws of physics or any school books or any kind of whatever that can ever convince me that this world doesn't have more than what we will ever be able to use in a trillion, 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 quadrillion, and to infinity and beyond lifetimes. This world is a self-contained biosphere of epic proportions. What you don't use, nature will take back, period. And everything that was on this planet, with the exception of whatever did go to space, if it did, every material that was ever on this planet is still on this planet in some form or fashion or another. It's like the firewood didn't go away. It just changed what kind of shape it was in, what kind of chemistry it was in. It's still here today. It's used for nutrients in soil. It's used for soap. It's used for traction in the snow so you can get your car out of the ditch. It's used for so many different purposes. The unburnt wood is used for activated charcoal, and it goes on and on and on. All you did was take that and made more stuff out of it. And then nature will break it back down and put it right back where it belongs. Period.
You're always saying simple for the common man, right? Well, is not solar panels and battery units simple? And wind power, is it not simple? If every house in America, Canada, is replaced with a solar panel roof, and a battery pack in each home, would that not create jobs?
Sure would. And right. And it's a, so the, it's and a if small
every
fraction.
Every car is turned into electric, and every bike, and even dirt bikes out there that are turned into electric.
Sure would.
Would that not create jobs?
Sure right, would.
So the new era is going to be amazing, and people shouldn't be scared of it.
And opening up the mom and pop industries of redesigning and re-engineering existing technology would also create jobs. And do the same exact thing. So all this thing about worrying about jobs and advancements in society, the choice isn't that we don't need or don't do need jobs. The choice is whether or not you want the jobs in your hands or whether you want the jobs in the main system's hands. The mainstream elite, the mainstream media, the mainstream governments, the mainstream industries, the mainstream corporations. Do you want it in their hands or do you want it in the people's hands? That's the only difference from anything we're talking. It doesn't matter if I come up with a free energy device tomorrow and the fuel industries want to buy it out or whatever. If that free energy device comes out there, it's still going to open up more jobs because somebody's got to manufacture them. Is it going to be the companies or is it going to be the people? The choice is up to you, period.
Then we should be no different than China. We should tax the companies and not tax the little guy, right? Just like China does. But and you go to China, most of them are all walking around Calvin Klein living the dream as one would.
Why tax anyone? Why tax anyone unless you want to feed the system?
You're saying, be fair, right? We have to. It's a give and take because we have to have authority and control. Men and women do stupid things, and man and woman can be very sick.
All right, so wait, hold on a second. And we're running down to the wire here. Hold on a second. But you said, the key word, you said that we have to have structure and control because man will do stupid things. Well, who's the man who is in charge of enforcing the structure and control? Aren't they just as stupid as everybody else?
I've not religions divided and conquered.
It doesn't matter, Justin.
This time of history, so it's the religions, right? Beliefs. This is what it is. Beliefs. I have a belief, you have a belief, Jermaine has a belief, and then we all get into a debate, and sometimes we have common beliefs, right? So that's what it is. It becomes a religion. When two or more people believe in the same thing, it becomes a religion. That's
well,
what the
you know
word
what?
Means.
I couldn't care less. Belief. I couldn't care less about religion. All I care about is giving the option to the people to take control of their own future and destiny. If you want to save the world, then it's up to you. It's up to each and every one of you.
If we had choices with what the companies are producing and with what, you know, like they're being taxed and what they're making, right? CEOs shouldn't be making $5 million a year, right?
That
should be going to the churches. That should be going to the kids, right? So if we had the standing to say what comes out of these companies and how much they're going to make, then that would be a correlation.
As long as you're playing the game with their monopoly money, you still have the power in your hand because you can shift the monopoly money to whichever corporation you feel is doing the best job and you can run the other one completely out of business. And so there is no excuse that could be come up with to say why it is, other than the fact of sheer complicity and basically going along to get along, is why the power structure is still intact. You feed the beast, and the beast survives. If you starve the beast, then the beast dies. It's as simple as that. And the power in the masses of the people, if they want that power and they take that power, then there is no one on this planet who is powerful enough to stop it when 9 billion people step forward and say we've had enough. It's as simple as that.
Right. I don't think, you know, like, people have to live, right? Either if you're doing it for yourself in your own garden, or if you're helping a neighbor out, right? 30 hours a week doesn't seem bad to contribute to help society out, right? Because the roads need to be paved, we need street lights, we need all these things.
Sure.
So if everybody had 30 hours a week and, you know, 3 months of vacation and everybody got paid decent, you know, school teachers never had to worry because the community took care of them, bought their house, built their house, whatever, right? However you want to phrase it.
All right, listen to this.
We took care of each other and we made the choices like we're made to believe, right? That's a garment, a veil, a hood. We're told we can vote. vote means that we vow. And using the principle of
Jesus,
he said never to make a vow or affirm or to swear on anybody.
Save all those concepts.
We as a community need to make these choices.
Save all those concepts for the Knights of the Round Table. Well, basically, it's simple as this. In my own personal property down here, if I drive down my driveway and I got a chuck hole in my driveway that's beating my car senseless and I want to fix it, you know what? I get out there, I fix it. It problem solved. I got a smooth driveway. Alright, the same thing in all communities out there. If you want to rely on a system of government and you're willing to pay taxes to do so, to make sure that you have smooth roads out there, as long as they do the job, which in my area they do not do the job because the roads are terrible and people don't follow by the rules where they drive heavy equipment across there all the time, tractor trailers, and at higher rates of speed and bust holes in it, that it's a continuous ongoing battle to try to keep a smooth path to drive from to and fro. Well, until people stop abusing the system, until people stop feeding the beast that is the system, then everything will be the status quo. But when the system, necessity is the mother of invention, and when you have a necessity for your community and your community wants and has the will power to do so, then it gets resolved. It's people that get things done. It's as simple as that. We have every right. single answer, every single piece of the puzzle, all the technology necessary to make this world perfect. It's just a matter of wait. Sit back and wait for the people to realize that the power has always been at their fingertips.
Well, anyway, can't wait, otherwise everybody will be waiting for a long time.
Why do you think we're doing this show, Justin? Why do you think we're doing this show?
We're not waiting.
That's right, we're doing this show. We're proactive, we're teaching people how to do things. So we're doing the best we can in the circumstances that we got to deal with. We got a brilliant mind such as Jermaine and yourself and Muddy and Thomas and Raymond and all the other people and Steven that posts links in the chat room all the time. That's what the Shaziz Radio Network's all about, is bringing people together, discussing all the different things that we've researched, all the different options available, and how we can make the world a better place. And those out there who see us leading by example, even if it's just by our words and our knowledge and our information that we share, then that's what we have to do until it's done. I keep working on things in my own personal life, and I keep sharing them with people. I keep making videos, and I keep this network alive because I believe in the dream, and I believe that if we keep doing what we're doing and we get enough people interested, then we can network enough people to where we can take already existing technology and make it better, which in turn makes the world better because you have to use less of whatever it was that you were using before. Anyway, you got any last words? Because the Mad Science Show is coming to a close.
Right. The thing is, it already exists, but I think that car companies invent or create their own engines because they don't want to pay any royalties for the patents of the technologies that work better, more efficient.
Yep.
So that's the thing. It already exists, but it's just the companies that just won't use them because of obvious reasons. And that's something we need to think about and look at all the different technologies, everything, and just pick out the best ones.
That's right. Find the most efficient thing that they make and reject what they don't make, and that will tell them that the only way that they're ever going to sell anything is that they make it such a quality and so efficient, because the rest of the junk they put together we've rejected with our monopoly money, and we created our own when necessary. So there you go. That's the answer. Good job,
right,
Jermaine.
The thing is, so don't look at modern day engines, look at the old stuff, the old timers.
Yep.
They're all different sorts. Now it's all this more or less the same and inefficient. So you need to look at all the different methods on how they did it back in the day and just make one engine out of it that uses all the parts that make it efficient.
So essentially take the best of the best and form it all into one specifically designed on whatever fuel you choose. There you go. Well, folks, that's the Mad Science Show. If you like this podcast, share it around with your social media networks out there, you know, Facebook, YouTube, or whatever. Just let some people know that there's people out there trying to do what needs to be done and giving the information away freely. And if you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough for it because we're surrounded in it. You're floating in a sea of it right now. Mm-hmm. So, peace and love, everybody. Take care. You've been listening to Mad Science.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.